The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole. Rock, rock, rock and Nicole. Rock, rock, rock and Nicole. But once she grabs, she won't let go.
Everyone sing.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
Yeah.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Mm-mm.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
Just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rock and Nicole.
What do you think?
Just I like love that. It. That was great. Thank you.
Big laughs up the hall.
Since Dobbs was decided, the Christian right and all their kin are leading states in the Southland to make most sex lives a sin. Watch them begin. About women's health care consequences. These guys have been completely deaf. But now the mess they've made is bothering them. They didn't mean to end IVF, no clinics left. Sweet home Alabama, where Christian strictures we embrace. Sweet home Alabama, where we women know our place. The government is taking over now. Oi, oi, they're controlling how we procreate. Pretty soon the only screwing they'll allow is of the separation between church and state. Won't that be great? Sweet home Alabama, where basic rights we curtail. Sweet home Alabama, turn it into the Handmaid's Tale without fail. Those new rules firm. And when a feller's masturbating, does he owe child support for every sperm coming out to squirt?
Yes.
Sweet home Alabama, where Christian strictures we embrace. Sweet home Alabama, where we women know our place. Sweet home Alabama, where basic rights we curtail.
That too.
Sweet home Alabama, turn it into the Handmaid's Tale without fail.
Oh yeah.
Sweet home.
Wait, don't turn the video off just yet. It's a warning with a very quick reminder that if you're enjoying these weekly videos, I hope you consider supporting me on my Patreon. For as little as $2 a month, which is less than half the cost of a latte, you'll get bonus content as well as the satisfaction of your helping me continue to put these videos out, helping everybody laugh at the news. And these days, don't we all need more laughter?
Yes.
Thanks.
All right. Lauren Mayer, everybody, getting us started on this Wednesday broadcast. Oh, I see why it's not working. Okay. Now it should be working on David's phone. I forgot to switch over the input to the video, to the audio stream. Sorry, there's just so much. But we're here. We're here. It's Wednesday. And yesterday was such a heavy discussion that I thought today we needed to lighten the tone a bit, right? And have a little bit of fun. So why do I hear echo? Anyway, hopefully all the sound is good. I'm looking at the chat room because you guys let me know when something's not quite right. Lauren Mayer, you know, she's so creative And I love that she's so topical. Now, she usually puts out these songs on Fridays, and I don't get to them until the following week because on Friday, I don't have time to start with a funny song because Marcy Wheeler is here, and we always use up every moment of the hour and then some, usually. And that just dropped, you know, a few minutes ago. But she's on Lauren Mayer is on top of the news and having fun with music. And that's kind of what today is going to be about. Well, there's news. We'll get to that in just a moment. But I do have a guest coming up. And I was pitched on this book a few months ago when I was still working on the project that consumed, you know, more than a year of my life, this Women Who Rock thing, which is dead, in case you didn't hear. It's not happening. Unless if you're listening and you think that that's a great idea to start a all-female radio station and want to fund it, let me know and we'll talk. Because I have the format, I've got the clocks, I've got the library, I've got everything. I just don't have the money to make it happen. Anyway, I digress. So I was pitched on this book by a music rock journalist, Catherine Yeske Taylor, called She's a Badass, Women in Rock Shaping Feminism. And she's got 20 chapters. She interviewed 20 different women from all walks of popular music. And it's a compelling book. It's really, it's good bathroom reading because, you know, the each chapter is self, the brain and the mouth are not working together today. Each chapter is stands on its own. And, you know, here's a chapter on Afra with Amy Ray of the Indigo Girls, big Indigo Girls fan. So anyway, Suzanne Vega in there, a whole bunch. So we'll talk to her at the bottom of the hour. Yes, like a Lilith Fair Radio, Civic Folly 86. Yeah, another day. We'll talk about that another day. There is some news today on a Wednesday. Breaking news just moments ago. A deal was announced, you know, just like I said, moments ago, that would give Congress more time to pass spending legislation before the government runs out of money. So there was supposed to be the first, you know, mountain to get over this Friday. The first deadline for a shutdown was this Friday. And of course, the speaker, Meeker Speaker Johnson, said, coming up to a deadline to pass a funding bill. And if not, we shut down the government. Perfect time to go on vacation for 2 weeks. So that's what they did. They just came back. But yesterday, President Biden convened a meeting in the Oval Office of leadership. That would be the two Democratic leaders, Hakeem Jeffries and Chuckie Schumer. And on the right, Speaker Meeker Johnson and Moscow Mitch McConnell. So they had a little sit-down powwow in the Oval Office yesterday. And today they announced that they're going to kick the proverbial can down the road. So new deadlines, they push them back basically a little over a week. So the new deadlines would be March 8th and March 22nd, buys them an extra week or two. They will vote on it, you know, before Friday's planned deadline. Yeah, don't ask me to explain it. I just read the news. I can't explain it because none of it makes sense. All right, so that happened. Next, a New York judge, this would be Judge Engoron, rejected a request from the former guy, you know, the Orange Menace, to delay enforcement of a judgment, meaning he doesn't have to come up with a total $450 million immediately. Or actually, he does have to come up with, to delay. Trump wanted them to delay it. In fact, what his argument was, or his lawyer said, well, he shouldn't have to come up with $454 million because you know he's rich. You know he's good for it. So how about if he just comes up with $100 million? And the judge said, that's
bullshit.
Yeah, no. But he did give a little bit and allowed the spawn to remain in leadership positions running the Trump organization. What? Oh, maybe it wasn't Judge Engoron. Maybe it was the See, I'm reading things into it. I should just read it as it's presented, because this decision came from one judge. So this is an appeals court, I guess. So not, forget what I said, not Engoron. The full panel is expected to review and possibly modify this ruling next month. So the first review of the appeal said, no, Donald, if you're that rich, pony up the money. If you have it, flaunt it. You do everything else, right? And now a judge is signaling that, you know what? He really doesn't have the money. Wait, I thought I had it here. Here, New York Attorney General warns, quote, Trump doesn't have enough cash to pay the fraud penalty. I see a fire sale in our future. Not that I would want anything from his garish apartment. Just saying. Not that I'm there and I could shop anyway, but, you know, just saying. All right, so that's that. The thing is, Eric and DJ TJ should not be allowed to run the organization. I thought they're banned from doing business in New York for, what, 2 or 3 years. So there's that. Mitch McConnell made news today. Oh, shoot. You know what? Do I have the video? Because I really want you to see. I've got the audio here. Mitch McConnell got up on the Senate floor and said that it's time to step down. He said it just like that.
To serve Kentucky in the Senate has been the honor of my life. Okay. To lead my Republican colleagues has been the highest privilege. But one of life's most underappreciated talents is to know when it's time to move on to life's next chapter. So I stand before you today, Mr. President, and my colleagues, to say this will be my last term as Republican leader of the Senate. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. However, I'll complete my job. My colleagues have given me until we select a new leader in November, and they take the helm next January.
They take the helm.
I'll finish the job the people of Kentucky hired me to do as well.
Yeah.
Albeit from a different seat.
Yeah, albeit from a different seat. But I'm going to put this this graphic, this video up, if it'll play, up on the video screen. Do I not have that monitor? Where is that? Oh, there it is. Because what I noticed immediately is how gaunt he looks. Here. Okay, so here's a video from, what is this? The recount. And you can see him, but he looks really gaunt. I guess that's the word.
At 42.
Okay, enough. He looks like he's lost a lot of weight. I think Mitch McConnell has some serious, serious health problems that they are not, being honest about. Look, we saw him glitch. We saw he froze at the podium and was unable to move twice. He fell and he hit his head, and he's 82. You know, he's a whole lot older at 82 than Biden appears at 81, just saying. And the reason I bring that up is to say everybody ages differently. Look, I look like a spry young 40-year-old, don't I? But I see some people who are 64 and I think, oh my God, that's an old lady. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, we all age differently. Mitch McConnell is an old 82. I think Joe Biden is kind of a young 81, but you know, don't ask. that's under dispute these days. So I don't know. I was just impressed with his appearance the other night on Seth Meyers. I thought he was very funny. He was quick-witted. He was sharp. He is sharp on making decisions and leading the world, so to speak. Yeah. And Donald Trump is the opposite. So, Neurogeezer says somebody after my own heart says, no way you're as old as 40. Yeah. Oh, maybe he's not talking to me. Yeah. But anyway, so Mitch McConnell, though, he's going to step down as Senate minority leader, although he said they're going to take back control of the Senate in January. That's the funniest thing I've heard today. And that they're, well, the way the Senate map is shaping up, I guess it's feasible they could. That's why you need to vote. Anyway, I digress. Mitch McConnell looking old and feeble. Joe Biden, well, Donald Trump, old and infirm. So Joe Biden went to Walter Reed yesterday, or today, was it today? Whatever, for his physical. It's regular practice. And, you know, he, at the advanced age of 81, owes it to the public to keep us abreast of his health. Of course, the right-wingers are bitching because his physical today didn't include a cognitive test. Just listen to him speak and stop with the, well, he stuttered and stammered his way through the thing. He has a stutter. Stutterers stutter. He's got a pretty good handle on it, I think. Oh, my God. I'm so sick of fighting back with people. But I guess that's what we do. By the way, our guests will be here at the bottom of the hour. That would be in about 15 minutes or so. In the meantime, if you want to weigh in on anything, any of the news, any of the stories I'm talking about, the phone lines are open. 954-889-6410 is the regular telephone number. If you're on Skype, you can Skype right into Nicole Sandler. I take calls. I don't screen them. I don't have a screener. But if you want to weigh in on anything, feel free. Call in. In the meantime, I will tell you the rest of the news or just other news stories that I find interesting. And I see Chris in the chat room says, Biden passed his ice cream test. You know, you can't win with this media. So Joe Biden and Seth Meyers go down to, I guess there's an ice cream shop in the, you know, on the ground level of Rockefeller Center where NBC is. And they went, you know, with the cameras following them for ice cream. So he's got his cone in his hand. And some reporter asks him about Israel and Palestine. Really, that's the moment you choose to ask him a serious question? And so he answered the question. And then the same people are criticizing him for talking, you know, serious war and death issues while holding an ice cream cone. What do you expect him to do? The outrage is just so ridiculous. Stop it already. Would you just stop it? Stop it, stop it, stop it. Now, the other news, and again, this is another stop it. So yesterday, as we told you, Michigan held their presidential primaries. And as expected, Joe Biden won the Democratic primary in Michigan, and the former guy won the Republican primary. However, if you looked at the New York Times, the former paper of records coverage, they're like, well, Donald Trump won a rousing 70-point victory over Nikki Haley. But Joe Biden, there were 100,000 votes for uncommitted. Yeah. Forget about the raw number. Look at percentage of the vote. 13%. Pretty big showing. And I think what Rashida Tlaib did is was the wrong move. I believe protest all you want. That's an American right. But don't fuck with the vote. The vote, as we've learned, is really delicate. And the other side likes to steal it and accuse us of doing it. That's the opposite world faction in there. They do the stealing and then accuse us of doing what they do. And we're still fighting over the last one, and we already know Donald Trump is doing it again this time. He will lose, but he will again fight and say that we stole it. And now he's got his crazy sycophants screaming that they will if he has the election, quote, stolen from him again, that they will take to the streets and revolution and, you know, stop it already. So the last thing Democrats should be doing is fucking with the vote. You want to protest? Get your signs, march up and down the streets, scream your little hearts out. But the vote needs to be off limits. You don't screw with a vote. That has to be above the fray. Leave it alone. Did I make myself clear on that one? Yeah. So there was that. But anyway, so yeah, so 13% of the electorate in Michigan of the Democratic voters voted for uncommitted. By the way, uncommitted beat Dean Phillips, who got about 3% of the vote, as did Marianne Williamson, who has already withdrawn from the race, but her name was still on the ballot. By the way, the last time there was such a matchup, a Democratic incumbent on a primary ballot in Michigan, it was Barack Obama. And I believe that uncommitted got somewhere between 13 and 20% of the vote. It was 13% last night. So even if they were on an even keel, it tells me that this campaign to you'll show Joe Biden that he can't. What? He's not the one dropping the bombs. He doesn't control Netanyahu. He's told Netanyahu to cut it out, to stop killing innocent people. And obviously, it's a lot more complicated than that. But you know what I'm saying. So you're going to punish Joe Biden? And if you think that it would be better for the innocent people in Gaza if Donald Trump was in office, I've got a bridge to sell you. I've got some land that I left in Florida, not far from the house we left in Florida. If Donald Trump were in the White House right now, if he were president when October 7th happened, when the Hamas terrorists and their sympathizers from inside Gaza crossed over into Israel and went on a murdering, raping rampage and did what they did, Trump probably would have nuked Gaza by now. If you think that things will be better for Palestinian Americans or Palestinians or the oppressed people of the world under a Donald Trump, I don't know what you're drinking or smoking, but share with the rest of us, please, because you're out of your mind. Donald Trump, who will just tell Putin, go for it, just flatten Ukraine, take it back. He would do the same thing with Netanyahu. Trump loves Netanyahu. So I don't understand. It's the old adage, what are you going to cut off your nose to spite your face? I remember my mother used to say that when I was a kid. Cut off your nose to spite your face. And that it stuck with me all these years. That would be a really stupid thing to do. But that's what some of these Democrats are doing. So there's that. I don't get, again, I'm all for protest. I'm all for standing up for what you believe in. But our vote is really the only thing standing between us and a 21st century Hitler rising to power, because that's what Donald Trump is and will be, given the chance. And the vote is the mechanism by which he'll get there. And, you know, it's already so tenuous and you want to screw around with it? It's just stupid. Jesus Christ. There is some good news in the Trump trial world. Eileen Cannon, remember her? She's the judge down in Florida who is in charge of the classified documents case. To refresh your memory, Donald Trump loaded, and his people loaded up boxes and boxes of documents with classified markings, some like top secret, and hid them from the government. I mean, many, many, many documents, boxes and boxes. We've seen the pictures. And then when the National Archives contacted him and said, oh, I think you might have made a mistake, he lied to them and hid what he still had, because they belong to me. I took them. They're mine. Yeah. Sorry. I get carried away sometimes. Well, now, as part of, I guess, their discovery, Trump's people are saying they want to see some of these documents, these highly classified documents. And much to my surprise, Judge Eileen Cannon yesterday gave Jack Smith a win. she said she granted Jack Smith's request to prevent Trump and his co-defendants, Walt Nauta and Carlos de Oliveira, from getting access to those classified materials that were produced in discovery. Here, the judge's order said, quote, "The court, following a careful review of the motions and related filings, concludes that the special counsel has carried his burden to withhold from defendants Nauta and de Oliveira personally all classified discovery produced to date. The court makes this determination following colloquies with defense counsel concerning their theories of the case and anticipated defenses, and after a thorough review of the underlying classified materials with a view to defendants' interests." In English, they have no right to see these classified documents. They don't have secret clearance. They don't have any clearance. No way do they get to see this. That's compounding crime on top of crime, isn't it? It's just amazing. I just don't get it. We can keep going until our guest gets here, because there's lots more news. So Lauren Boebert, Lauren, she's been out of our thoughts for a little while, ever since she went to see a theater production of Beetlejuice with some guy she was shipping. And they decided to, inside a theater where kids were present, because it is a family-friendly show anyway. She was grabbing her date's crotch and he was feeling her up, and her boobs were spilling all over her dress. No, I'm not a prude, but, you know, a little bit of modesty, please. You're a member of Congress, for God's sake. And they finally got kicked out of the theater. And we've all seen it because there are cameras everywhere. And we saw the footage from inside the theater with him feeling her up and her feeling him up, and like, ew. Well, today she said, so she got up and, you know, was screaming about the Biden crime family or some nonsense when the news broke that Lauren Boebert's teenage son was arrested on nearly two dozen charges related to a crime spree in the Colorado district that she still allegedly represents. The kid's 18 years old, by the way, made Lauren at 36 a grandpa. You see a trend here. He's 18, she's 36, meaning she had him when he was 18, or when she was 18, sorry. And now he's arrested. Police say 18-year-old Tyler Boebert was arrested Tuesday after a recent string of vehicle trespass and property thefts in Rifle. The town's called Rifle, Colorado, where the congressman lives and operated a gun-themed restaurant. I couldn't make this shit up if I tried. She was booked into the Garfield County Jail, or he was, sorry, the son, on four counts of criminal possession of a financial device. Wonder what that is. Four counts of criminal possession of ID documents and a count of conspiracy to commit a felony. Okay. Now, her ex-husband, the kid's father, Jason Boebert, was arrested twice in the last year and slapped with a restraining order. Boebert faced criticism for her lewd, quote, I'm reading an article, lewd and obnoxious behavior with another man at a Denver performance of Beetlejuice. Oh, and Tyler Boebert, the one who was arrested, called 911 in December of 2022 to report that his father was, quote, throwing him around the house. But then he called back to say it had only been a verbal dispute, although he reported last month that his father had shoved him to the ground, put a hand over his mouth, and armed himself. And yes, Lauren announced in March of last year that her son was expecting her grandchild with his teenage girlfriend. That's the American values, family values party, in case you're wondering. Oh, one other thing. Massive measles outbreak in Florida. Florida. Where the Surgeon General, appointed by Governor Moron, death sentence, Joseph Latipo, is an anti-vaxxer. He said things like, you don't get the COVID vaccine. More people die after being vaccinated than not. And the answer to that is no, that's
bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's not true. And so because this guy says, oh, don't get vaccinated. He's the Surgeon General of the state of Florida. Are you kidding me? Oy. So anyway, there's more. I saw our guest and now she's not there. I hope she's coming back. She might have heard me. When I have a guest on, you know, talking music and stuff, we don't really talk politics. And she might have heard me railing against Lauren Boebert. I'm not talking to this woman. I don't know. Hopefully she comes back. This is the thing about, you know, one, not having a producer, two, doing things on Zoom, because I can see when they come in. And then she left. Let me see. She's got my cell number. So there's not going to be, let's see nothing. Hopefully she'll be back. Oh, wait, something just happened. No, somebody else. Okay. Well, let's see. There she is. Okay. So she's back and let me get the shot set up and we're going to talk to our guest because you know me, when I get stressed out, when politics gets to be too crazy for even me, it's depressing, you know? I mean, we've talked about this many times. The thing that evens me out, the thing that makes me kind of be able to pull it together is music. Real quick story as I get our shot set up is after the former guy was elected back in 2016, I fell into a really bad depression. I mean, I had a hard time dealing with it, as did many others. And the thing that pulled me out of it was music. You know, I realized that if I spend too much time not letting music just take over, then I get even crazier than I already am. So I always welcome a good musical diversion. And since, you know, yesterday's show was really heavy, we're talking about neo-Nazi teenagers. Oh my God, there's just so much of that you can take. And then you need to turn up the music really, really loud and just lose yourself in it. So I was very happy that today I had scheduled on the show, Catherine Yeske Taylor. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right.
You are.
Okay. And she's a music journalist, has been for years, and wrote this new book called She's a Badass, Women in Rock Shaping Feminism. Kat, is it Kat or Catherine or what do I call
it? Either
you?
Way.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here and thank you for writing this book. It's a great idea.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I don't know if you knew, when I first was told about your book, I was working on a project that I really poured my heart into for about a year, trying to get it going. It was going to be a radio station, run by, programmed by, playing music of exclusively women.
Oh, wow.
Women, right? It was women who rock. I had the music going. I've got the library put together. I had the clocks built. We didn't have the funding. And it's really too bad. And I finally had to say, no, we're just not doing it because I put so much time into it. But I think the time is perfect now for something like that because, well, you write a lot about it in the book. You have 20 chapters. Each chapter is another female rocker. And you talk about all kinds of things, but mostly the connecting thread seems to be navigating the business, the music industry as a woman.
Yes, that's right. In my career as a music journalist, I kept hearing a lot of stories from women about their experiences coming up in this business. And so when I had the opportunity to write a book, it was the obvious topic for me to choose.
So how did you come up with it? It's a very diverse list because I got to tell you, I know my stuff when it comes to music. But there are names in here that I'm not even familiar with. So I'm going through, you start with Susie Quattro, which makes sense because she was like the original female front woman rock and roller. She was really the first to step out and do it, wasn't she?
Yes. Susie was also the first one to agree to do this book.
Really?
So she was the first in that way too.
You know, it's interesting because she recently hooked up with another artist. She's Australian named Katie Tunstall. and they did a, they wrote a song together and recorded. I think they put out a whole album. Unfortunately, it didn't really go anywhere, but it
not
was
here, but in the UK it did, and in Australia.
Oh, really? Because, well, Katie Tunstall is obviously from Australia, and Susie Quattro, although she never got hugely famous here, she is and was and continues to be in the UK. She lives there, right?
Yeah, that's right. She's originally from Detroit, but then she got very famous across Europe and in Australia. Here, she's mostly known for the song Stumbling In, and, if you remember that one.
And as Leather Tuscadero on Happy Days.
And as Leather Tuscadero on Happy Days.
Right. That's what I'm old. I remember that. So you start with Susie Quattro. You got Ann Wilson. You have Exene Cervenka, who a lot of people may not know. But she's the female half of X. Now, I spent many years doing radio in Los Angeles. X was sort of, it's LA's band. And her story is an interesting one because she didn't come out of music. She was not a musician when she met John Doe.
Right. She talks in the book about how she basically fell into her music career by accident and just had a knack for it and has stayed with it ever since. So it's interesting to contrast her with the other women in the book who, for the most part, were really obsessed with music from childhood and that's all they wanted to do. So Exene is an interesting one because she expressed a lot of opinions, too, that were different from other women in the book. So
well, she's kind of. And I say this with all due respect, and she's kind of a nut. She's out there. She's on every front, she marches to her own drummer, and good for her. And they're still touring. I just know, we just moved to the Phoenix area, and so I'm always looking for good music. And I see, I think they're not billed as X, they're billed as John Doe and Exene. And they're opening for, I think, the Psychedelic Furs or something. It's a weird matchup, but okay. I'd go see them if I could afford it.
Yeah, I think they toured, I think it was 2 years ago that same lineup toured, and I went to it here in New York, and it was actually really good. I mean, you wouldn't think maybe that it would work, but it did. They both kind of have that. The Psychedelic Furs have that post-punk edge to them. Right. So it worked pretty well.
Right. You move on. You have Gina Schock of the Go-Go's. Good one. Lydia Lunch. That's a name I hadn't heard since in a long time, but I used to play her music on the air in college. Suzanne Vega, Sherry Curry of the Runaways, Joan Osborne, Danita Sparks of L7, Amy Ray from the Indigo Girls. So a lot of very familiar names. Still, Tanya Donnelly. A little more obscure, but still throwing muses and a belly and Paula Cole. And then you get into a bunch of names that I'm not really familiar with.
Right. Because I wanted to show some of the women who are up and coming. I wanted to show that they're still having some of the same experiences that the women who started off in the 70s did. And I also wanted to be able to show how things have changed in certain ways.
You know what? Karina in the chat room just corrected me. Katie Tunstall's not Australian. She's Scottish. And I knew that. You're right, Karina. My listeners don't let me get away with anything. I did know that. For some reason, I just always associate her with Australia. You do have, I was going through this and telling my husband about the book last night as I'm reading some of it and preparing for today. And, I got to the section of the names I didn't know. But then I said, Orianthe. Am I saying her name right? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Orianthe. She was a guitar player
from Michael Jackson.
Jackson, yes. When he was preparing to do his This Is It tour, the one that never actually came to fruition. But there is video of her rehearsing with him, and it's really cool. She also has played with Alice Cooper, so she's quite varied. She was discovered by Michael Jackson, basically, when she was playing with Carrie Underwood. So she's an extraordinarily diverse guitarist. And she has a solo career of her own also, but she's mostly known for being a hired gun. So her perspective was really interesting, I thought, because she had to talk about how she's had to get along with such a wide range of people and what that means as a woman.
Well, and that's the thing. It is a man's world, the music industry, yes, but more specifically, the world of rock and roll. And there was one... it was the Suzy Quatro chapter. I was really fascinated when she said, and so, you know, I go back in the, I guess, the green room area or wherever the band's hanging out, and I walk in and they've got some, you know, porn playing on the TV. And that's all fine, but not when I'm in the room. And I'm like, turn it off. If I'm in the room, turn it off. The fact that she even has to say that is kind of astounding.
Yeah, some things have gotten a lot better, I think. You know, some things have remained stubbornly the same, but there are some things that have gotten better. I do feel like people like Suzy Quatro really blazed a trail for women now to be able to stand up and say, this is making me uncomfortable, or don't do that to me again, kind of thing, and be taken seriously. Whereas, you know, when Suzy was doing it, it was kind of unheard of. It was, you know, she really was tough to be able to do that in that environment back then.
Right. We're speaking with Catherine Yeske Taylor. Her book is She's a Badass, Women in Rock Shaping Feminism. And it's a great idea. You interviewed a bunch of female musicians, both the rock star variety and the up and comers, and questioned them about navigating this world. How did you choose the 20?
Well, I started off thinking of people who I've interviewed before. In my career, who seemed to have really interesting things to say. So I approached them first. And that's how I got about 2/3 of the women for the book. And then once I had them in place, I approached some people like Exene, who I'd never interviewed before, who I thought would have really interesting things to say. And then, you know, filled it in from there with some up and comers that I thought deserved recognition, such as LA Witch and Death Valley Girls, and these bands who are just starting to take off now and I think deserve more recognition.
Great. Now, you live in the New York area, yes? You
said? Yes, I live in New York City.
And so your background, so how did you get into music journalism?
Well, I actually, if you look at my introduction in this book, mm-hmm. I go into how I started off at my school newspaper, which is pretty dorky, I guess.
No, but, that's,
you know,
where
gotta
you start
somewhere. And they had wanted me to cover student government meetings, and I absolutely refused. and so I said, I want to interview some of the local musicians. And I was in Atlanta at that time. And the local musicians happened to be people like Indigo Girls and Black Crowes.
Oh, yeah.
Bands like that, that were starting to get popular. And so I called up the management office and explained what I'd wanted. And a lot of times when people got done laughing at the fact that some kid was requesting an interview for their school paper, they'd agreed to do it, I guess, to reward me for having the guts to ask. And it just kind of snowballed from there. I went on to journalism school at the University of Georgia over in Athens, where REM and the B-52s were also having a movement. And I guess I was just lucky to be in a couple of places where the music scene was especially good at that time. And I just kept at it from there. So
and so you've been able to have a career. Did you ever work at a music magazine? Because it seems like it's a limited universe.
Well, it's interesting because I talk in the introduction. I talk about how I can relate to a lot of the women that I interview in this book, because especially when I started off, I'd be the only female staff member sometimes, and it was the case that sometimes the male staff writers didn't want to let me in that club and could be pretty disparaging. So I feel like it really set me up to be empathetic to the women that I interviewed subsequently in my career and for this book specifically. So, but yeah, it's a hard career to choose, and you have to be really thick skinned. I think it's not just the musicians who have to be that way. It has to be anybody in this business, such as yourself, DJs, music executives, just anybody who's in this business has to be really tough, I think,
yes, to survive. And things are getting better. But yeah, so I came up again. I was always a music lover. I remember I'm in high school and I had to decide, you know, I'm going to go to college. What do I want to major in? And I remember going through the catalog and it's like nothing interested me. And then I saw, ooh, radio. I could do that because as a kid, that's what I did in my spare time. I went to concerts. We smoked a lot of pot and saw a lot of, I grew up in South Florida. And in the 70s, that's what we did. We smoked pot and we went to concerts. And so I went to the University of South Florida, majoring in broadcasting. I worked at the radio station. And it everything was a battle. And again, I came up at the time when women were starting to be accepted, but it was basically every radio station had one woman on the air, the token female. And there weren't a lot of female artists. I mean, there was, you know, there was Joan Baez and Joni Mitchell, but they were more 60s. In the 70s, well, you have Ann Wilson in here from Heart. But there were not a lot of... you know, female rockers. I know when I was in college, we broke, you know, the year that I started, U2, The Police. You know, I remember their first albums both came out. So I played I Will Follow, and I forget what the first single was from The Police. But those, that was the music that was coming up, new wave. Lydia Lunch was during that time. She never had a really big hit. But, and then, you know, it's always that battle. You're the woman on the air. And it was so refreshing that when I was years later, I'm on the air in Los Angeles at a radio station, and most of the air staff were women. It didn't matter anymore. And working at a radio station where, yes, you could play two female artists back to back, because that was always the thing. No, you can't play two women back to back, and you can't have more than two songs by female artists in an hour. Who makes up these rules?
A number of the artists in the book talk about that, about how they encountered that as recently as the 90s, which, you know, I know to some people listening to this might say, oh, that's a long time ago. But I mean, if you think about it, it's, you know, 40 years into rock music being a thing. Why is it still so segregated? It shouldn't be. It's fascinating to me that it could still persist even that late into the game. And, you know, these women talk about having men say this to them, like to their face, as if it's not even anything unusual. Like, well, you understand, it's just the way it is.
Right. Yeah. No. Well, we're here to change the world. So who surprised you most of all the interviews you did? Did anybody like just totally have a different reaction or different responses than you expected from them?
Well, you mentioned Exene. I kind of knew Exene would be that way. Exene isn't afraid to express opinions that are contrary to the majority, shall we say.
Yes.
And I think that's important because I wanted this book to express the fullest spectrum that it could. You know, I think that reflects society. There's going to be women with all different kinds of opinions about feminism, whether it's a good or a bad thing. And I thought it was important to give voice to, you know, as many opinions as I possibly could with this book to reflect that.
Yes. And again, you know, I mentioned, so I was doing radio in LA in the 90s, and in 94, we put this station on the air, KSCA, which only lasted 2.5 years. It was the last radio station owned by Gene Autry and his Golden West broadcasters. And the format was AAA, which is Adult Album Alternative. So, you know, we broke all kinds of new artists. We broke Sheryl Crow. We were the first to play Dave Matthews in Los Angeles. I did the first on-air interview with Dave Matthews in LA. I mean, and in the interview, I talk about, well, you're doing two nights at the Whiskey, Friday night and Saturday night. There are still some tickets available for Friday night. Can you imagine? The Whiskey holds like 250 people. You know, it's just when you look back, but no one knew him. We were the only ones playing him. But it was also the time when the Lilith Fair happened. So I was, and that was our music. That was the, you know, we played Sarah McLachlan before anyone else, and Joan Osborne and Sheryl Crow and, you know, so many of those artists. Well, I was looking for music to go see, and Sarah McLachlan is touring now, the 30th anniversary of Fumbling Towards Ecstasy. Which, wow. Oh my God, it's 30 years. So we're going to go. She's playing in Phoenix. And it's just like the blink of an eye. But what's so weird is she was on top of her game back then. It must have been around 95, 96. And she did this record and was huge. And then, you know, the last 30 years, I haven't heard much from her. And now I'm glad she's coming back and doing this. But you know, you wonder, is it the, I wonder, I'll have to reach out and see maybe if I can get an interview with her. You know, what happened? Where did she go?
Yeah, sometimes I wonder. I mean, Danita Sparks of L7 talks about that a little bit in this book about how, because of what we were saying a moment ago about women not being played on the radio as much, she wonders what would have happened with L7 if they had been given the same amount of airplay as their peers at the time, like Nirvana and Pearl Jam.
That's right.
You know, I mean, we'll never know, but, you know, there's a good chance that they could have been as popular because they were doing really well. And if they had been given the same consideration, well, who knows? And you wonder how many other women had their careers kind of artificially suppressed like that.
Very much so. But now we seem to be entering a new phase. I got to tell, when I was putting together the Women Who Rock project, rest in peace, there are so many new, Boy Genius, which is three women who had solo careers. Phoebe Bridgers was the only one whose name was somewhat moderately known, but they came together and now they were like this super group. Group Love. I'm drawing a blank now because I wasn't thinking, but there are a bunch of these female fronted bands that are now, they're getting a lot of attention. And then of course you can't deny the success of Taylor Swift.
Right. Yeah. I think there's a lot of room for optimism now. I mean, there's some things that are still problematic, but overall, I think when you look at what women are talking about in the 70s in this book compared to the women who are launching their careers now, it's quite a different environment, and that's amazing. I mean, you're always going to encounter someone who doesn't like what you do, but I think, you know, society as a whole has really shifted quite dramatically over the last 50 years.
Oh, without a doubt, but... You know, history repeats itself. There's a great song by Shirley Bassey fronting for with the Propeller Heads called History Repeating. And it's the fact that we're that Roe v. Wade was overturned and women are fighting for their rights to control their bodies again, as we were 50 years ago, is frightening.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Toby Vail talks about that in her chapter about how progress isn't linear. And it's kind of what you're saying now. It's a really good point to keep in mind, I think. Just because we've achieved a certain set of rights doesn't mean we're going to keep them if we don't constantly keep up that fight to maintain that equality and keep moving it in the right direction.
Right. And again, there's such a huge universe of female artists out there that, you know, I say, how'd you narrow it down to 20? I'm sure you had a wish list that was much greater.
Yes.
Right. who was your biggest want?
I tried to get Tracy Chapman.
Mm.
And this is before, you know, the resurgence of her career with Fast
right.
Car. And her manager just kept saying, you know, we'll get back to you. Mm. We'll get back to you. We'll get back to you. And after a certain point, I just had to move on because the book was due. So that was disappointing to me that I couldn't get her. I'm glad that I did get some women of color in this book because I think that perspective is really important to capture. But I think it would have been amazing if I could have gotten her. So Tracy, if you're out there, please, you know.
Yeah. And please.
A second volume, maybe.
Yeah, and tour again, please. I mean, it was so great to see her on the Grammys. She was just wonderful. And Joni Mitchell, a few years ago, she had an aneurysm or something. And I was afraid that was it. I'm grateful that I've gotten to interview her. Who's your favorite interview ever?
Oh, my gosh. It's so hard to really pick one. But I think I might pick one of your fellow Arizona residents and say Alice Cooper.
Oh, really? Ah.
Yeah. Because okay. I was a humongous Alice Cooper fan growing up. My parents thought that was really weird. But yeah, I've interviewed him a couple of times now, and he's really, you know, he was a lovely person both times and very open and very engaging. And he's doing really wonderful things for teens there in Phoenix and Mesa. He runs a Solid Rock Teen Centers.
Oh, good for him. I've heard good things.
Does a lot of charitable work that way. So, he's very openly a Christian, and he says this is how he is choosing to put his faith out into the world, and I respect that. So,
cool. Look, you've been in this field for a long time, as have I. I mean, these days I do mostly... talk, news, and politics, but my background is music radio, and that's my first love. I mean, that's, again, that's what makes me sane. And I've got my, I've interviewed some amazing people. I mean, I've got highlights, and we're talking women. I did, when I worked in LA, we used to take a morning show on the road to go to Starbucks all over the Los Angeles area, and we'd have different artists come out with us. And one of the high points of my career was Dar Williams and Joan Baez were touring together.
And oh, wow.
Dar agreed to come because we were the first to play her in LA. And to come and do a Starbucks with her. And she and Joan decided to come with her. And wow. So the two of them, we had a packed house in Starbucks at 7 o'clock in the morning. Joan showed up at 9, but that's okay. And they performed for, we had overflow crowd on the sidewalk and, of course, going out over the air. But they did the most amazing rendition. They did a few songs, but Amazing Grace, that I can still feel now 30 years later. It's like those moments live with, I've played it. I've repeated that on this show, like when I had to take a day off. But those are the moments, that you remember. Do you have one of those when you had the, you honed in on an artist and you got to do an interview and then they broke big?
I can't think of any offhand. That by the time they got to me, they were kind of established.
Gotcha.
There were a lot of local bands that I interviewed in Georgia that I thought should get big. I'm sure every music journalist has stories like that too, of bands that you think are amazing and why aren't they huge? And it's frustrating because you write about them hoping that it'll help, and for whatever reason, they just never can make that leap. And it's kind of a reminder of how hard it is to make it in this business. And so the people that do really deserve our respect for getting a far as they do.
Oh, absolutely. It's not an easy life. Mm-hmm. People think it's all glamorous. And whether you're doing, music journalism or music radio or getting up on stage and playing every night, it's all a struggle. And again, if you're a woman, it makes it so much more difficult. A lot of people said they didn't want to be called feminists in the book. But I think in order to be successful in what has always been sort of a man's world, you got to be a feminist, even if you don't want to use the word.
Yeah, I think that's essentially what was happening here, is that even the ones that didn't want that label still were promoting women's rights and female equality and all gender equality. And so whether they accepted that particular label or not, I think they still serve to help the women coming after them, especially.
Of course. And again, I've never been a big Taylor Swift fan in terms of her music. I'm a little old for her demographic, although I've come to appreciate her recently. You can't argue with the massive success she's had. I mean, she can top Bruce Springsteen in terms of concert revenue. Go for it. Like, I'll still see. I'm like the Swifties. I'm with Springsteen. I've seen him dozens of times. And actually, we'll see him again in a few weeks when he restarts the tour here in Phoenix. Taylor Swift has cultivated these fans. They grew up with her. And she is an industry unto herself, and she's teaching kids a good lesson. She treats her staff, her crew really well, and she stands up for what she believes in. And and again, venturing into politics, very gutsy for someone who started out in country music and is not a Republican.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think she's a good role model. And it's interesting because you can see how some people are really threatened by her success. And so it shows that we still have some ways to go, because I feel like if she were a male artist doing the same things, everybody would be going hats off,
That's
amazing
right.
accomplishments. But because it's a young woman doing these things, she's still under an extra layer of scrutiny.
More power to her and to you. Catherine Yeske Taylor, the book is She's a Badass. Women in Rock, Shaping Feminism. I say go for volume 2 and 3. I think it's fascinating. And maybe I'll get Women Who Rock going one of these years. And I think
it's
the time for it. Kat, it was nice talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it very much.
Me too. All right. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. With that, we are done. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. I should mention Howie Klein, former president of Reprise Records. He helped a lot of female artists, get their careers. and, you know, based on talent. Anyway, with that, we're done. We'll finish up the week with Howie tomorrow, Marcy Wheeler on Friday. I'm going to go take a deep breath and listen to some music. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll get back to the serious stuff tomorrow. You know, every now and then, you need to cleanse the palate and just take so much politics. And then you need to feed your creative side and get away from the ugliness and infighting. Go listen to some music. Peace out.